right? We got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. That. You don't got time for that, right? Let's go. Crank it. Let it cross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
Hey, what's happening? Welcome in Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I am Nick Schwert with Derek Johnson. Happy to have you with us. Lovely Monday afternoon. David Lawrence joins us in studio from 4 to 6 o'clock. And we've got a lot of KU football to talk. We'll start previewing that game upcoming against Ohio at 10 after 4 with Russ Eisenstein, the voice of Ohio and top 10 name that we've ever had here on RCST. Is that a fair assertion? Top 10 name, Russ Eisenstein?
Who else would be on that list? Do we need to do a Let's Rank stuff for names on this show?
Best names in RCST history. I don't know. I think we could put that together, but Russ is certainly going to be amongst them. He joins us at 4:10. Former Kansas defensive coordinator Bill Young. He was the D coordinator for that Orange Bowl team in 07. He joins us at 4:30. Some Big 12 talk. We'll do some Chiefs talk later this hour. KU loses to Central Michigan on Saturday, and it was a gut check day. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Well, there are other ways to put it, but that's probably the most succinct way to summarize what happened in Memorial Stadium on Saturday, 45-27. And as bad as the loss feels, it's kind of hard not to look back at one or two series on each side of the ball that really swung the game for the Chippewas. The offense for KU was struggling in the first half. Peyton Bender throws a pick with about a minute 10 left in the second quarter. CMU takes over at their own 10. And they're leading 17-6. So there's a little over a minute to go. You get an 11-point lead. They run 8 plays. They march 90 yards and score a touchdown in 1 minute and 5 seconds. 8 plays, 90 yards in 1 minute. So, you know, if you're down 11 at halftime, not ideal, but not insurmountable. But instead, you go in down 24-6, and it was over from there. Because KU came out in the second half, and all of a sudden, the offense looked like what we kind of expected them to. First drive of the second half. 4 plays, 75 yards in 1 minute. That was the first drive of the half. Ryan Shadler runs it in from 33 out. It's back to an 11-point game. Then on defense, you force a 3-and-out. Okay, now you've got some momentum. You get the ball back. 8 plays, 66 yards. Dom Williams touchdown run. Now it's just 24-20. And you've got a game and a heck of a chance. Mind you, this is early in the third quarter. You've cut the lead from 18-4, and there's still nearly 9 minutes left in the third quarter. The KU offense came out, and they looked completely re-energized in the second half because early on, Bender was getting a lot of pressure in his face, seemed to be a little bit more rattled simply because he didn't get that kind of a pressure in week one against SEMO. All of a sudden, Central Michigan is getting guys in his face, and the offense just didn't look quite as smooth as it did in week one. Coming out in the second half, it was completely different. It was exactly what they wanted to look like. Two consecutive touchdown drives with a 3-and-out on defense, that's exactly what you want to do. 3 of the first 4 drives in the second half went for touchdowns, but the defense just couldn't get the stops, and that's really what it came down to. From 4:35... left in the second quarter to 9:50 left in the fifth, or the fourth, excuse me. There isn't a fifth quarter, is there?
Not in this one.
So let me try that again. From 4:35 left in the second quarter to 9:50 in the fourth, so less than 2 full quarters of football, Central Michigan had 6 drives. 5 of them went for touchdowns, and those were drives of 83, 90, 73, 91, and 75 yards. So that's 5 touchdown drives totaling 412 yards in less than 2 quarters. It was big plays that KU was giving up over the top, and that was it, man. In the secondary was the position group that we had the most question marks about going into the season. And unfortunately, some of those questions started to answer themselves on Saturday. Shane Morris, the quarterback, was, outstanding. It's one of the greatest performances that an opponent has ever had against KU in program's history. Here are the list of guys who have passed for more yards in a game against KU than what Shane Morris did on Saturday. Morris had 467 yards. The guys who have passed for more, Seth Dagey of Texas Tech, Sam Bradford, and Phillip Rivers. Those are the only three guys who have thrown for more yards against KU than what Shane Morris did. And, two of those guys are still playing. Two of those guys are still playing on Sundays, and Seth Dagey played for one of the most prolific passing offenses in the in the country's history. Texas Tech, for about a 10-year span, everybody they were bringing through that program was putting up big numbers. You just don't expect to see it against Central Michigan. We knew that the secondary was going to have some growing pains. They were going to take their lumps, but you just didn't expect to see it against CMU in week two.
Well, and Shane Morris, he's the Michigan transfer, so it's like, okay, this kid was a former five-star, but you look at what he did in week one against Rhode Island, it wasn't very pretty, and you especially compare that to what he did this last week, and that makes it look even uglier. Week one, he was barely over 50%. He passed for 226 yards, which would be less than half what he did against Kansas, a touchdown and an interception. That's night and day numbers between what he did against Rhode Island in three overtimes to where you had plenty of other opportunities to score touchdowns in the red zone versus this Kansas secondary. And that's scary because I don't know about you, but I've heard this rumor that the Big 12, they like to pass the ball.
They do like to pass the ball. Now, I don't want to look at that game and say, well, if that's what Shane Morris can do, then what are, name quarterback X, Y, and Z from the Big 12, what are they going to do? Well, KU's not going to be giving up 500 yards through the air.
Right. It doesn't work in a linear perspective where, if this quarterback's better, he has to throw for more yards.
And for all we know, Shane Morris, former five-star recruit, former Michigan commit, the kid's got a ton of talent. This isn't just Joe Schmo walking into Memorial Stadium and throwing for 467. This guy was supposed to be one of the better quarterbacks in the country coming out of high school, and on Saturday, he didn't look like what you'd expect to see from a Central Michigan quarterback. He looked like a Michigan quarterback, right? And Clint Bowen is a heck of a defensive coordinator. They're going to make adjustments. They're going to figure out a way to write this. Now, that doesn't mean that the secondary isn't going to be one of the weaknesses of this team. We pegged it as, if there was an obvious weakness on the team, it was going to be the secondary. It kind of looked that way on Saturday. Now it's back to the drawing board. It's 313 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. When you just look at the total stats, 590 yards of offense for Central Michigan, 470 for KU. That's 100 yards shy of the most total yards in a KU game in program history. I think the record's 1180. And what'd they get to? 1060? There was a ton of offense on display. Unfortunately, a lot of it came from the Central Michigan side, because going into that game, if you would have said KU's got to score 50 to win, how would you have felt about it?
Not good.
You're not going to feel good about that if it's a proposition versus any opponent. Got to score 50 to win. We can talk about the offense, and we will, because it was different than what we saw in week one, but it's hard for me to point the finger solely at that offense, or even, I think, from a perspective of if you're trying to weigh what really cost you that game. The offense is probably significantly down on that list, considering, Peyton Bender did throw for 323 yards, a lot of that because he had to. 62 pass attempts are a new program record. But, the offense was able to get things going in the second half, but the defense just could not contain Shane Morris and that Chippewa's offense. The game was really a reality check, I think, and David Beatty said as much after the game. You talk about the hype, you talk about the buzz around the program, and that buzz is only going to sustain itself as long as you continue to accrue wins. And not only did KU lose on Saturday, they lost in a fashion that probably, I would say 99% of the people heading into that game were not expecting to see. If you thought Central Michigan was going to win, you probably thought it was going to be a nail-biter. And that wasn't the case down the stretch. 5 of 6 drives in two quarters less than two quarters, went for touchdowns. Three of them over 80 yards. And it's back to the drawing board for Clint Bowen. If nothing else, it serves as a useful reminder of where this team is and where they want to be. Because going into the season, we talked about the buzz. It unlike anything we'd seen in the past couple of years, probably unlike anything we've seen really since Charlie Weiss came along, right? That's the last time I remember there being some palpable buzz around the program where people are getting excited about things. And that's what you had going into this year. But it's hard to quantify it. It's hard to quantify exactly what that means. Okay, so there's buzz going around the program. Well, you won two games last year. Does that mean we should set the standard at two or three games? Like, is that what realistic expectations should be for this team? The buzz is a, you know, that's a very tricky thing to pin down. What exactly does it mean? Does it mean this team could be contending for a bowl? Does this mean they're going to go out and start competing regardless of the opponent in Big 12 play? And I think yesterday, or on Saturday, proved as a pretty succinct reminder that they've still got a long ways to go. The recruits are coming in. There's legitimate player, Big 12 caliber players on both sides of the ball, but they're not where they want to be yet. Zero sacks on the game for the KU defense. I mean, a disappointing result for the D-line. I still think there's a lot to be optimistic about there. Joe Dineen once again looked like the best version of himself that we've ever seen. I mean, he's absolutely in the upper half of inside linebackers that the Big 12 has to offer. 20 solo tackles through two games. That's second in the nation. Second in the nation in solo tackles for Joe Dineen. 27 combined tackles. That's tied for sixth in the country. And Dineen and Daniel Wise are both top five in the country in tackles for a loss. So you've got players there, you've got playmakers there, but they just weren't able to get in the quarterback's face. The secondary wasn't able to contain him. It was, I mean, Shane Morris kind of diced up the KU defense. And now all of a sudden you're 1-1. You've got one non-conference game left. We said before the season, 2-1 in non-con play is going to be about what you shoot for. If you can go 3-0, holy cow, then you're really going to have some momentum heading into Big 12 play. Well, now you're 1-1. You've still got an opportunity, but you liked your chances of beating Central Michigan at home a lot more than your chances of beating Ohio on the road, a team who came into Memorial Stadium last year and won pretty handily. So we talked about last week being the biggest game of the season. Well, let's just carry that over to this Saturday. It's absolutely what it is, and the pressure is intensified because now you're on the road, and you're probably not going to be favored. So KU's got a ton of pressure to go on the road and get a win this Saturday.
I just saw an early line on it. It has Ohio as a 7.5-point favorite.
You can't argue with it. I mean, there are plenty of positives with this. There are plenty of reasons to be optimistic that Saturday was the worst version of themselves as opposed to what you should be expecting the rest of the way. Because Clint Bowen has tons of guys at his disposal on defense who are legitimate playmakers in the Big 12. But it just didn't really look like it on Saturday.
Well, and that's the thing here. I think we approach this as, well, there was so much hype going into the season that not necessarily that this team could make a bowl game or something, but just that so much improvement was going on, that this team could win three or four games. And now you lose the Central Michigan game, and then you start looking at the schedule and going, well, that was probably the most winnable game. But, I mean, there's a good chance KU didn't play their best game. And there's a good chance that Central Michigan played one of their best games of the season. So if you look at that, KU maybe plays a better game in another week and is able to get a win. I mean, if we sit back, and obviously it's easier to panic now because this just happened. And I think that probably ramps up if you lose to Ohio. But if you're to go out and beat Ohio in Ohio, I think that kind of resurrects what just happened. Because if
it would be a bigger win. It would be a bigger win to go and beat Ohio than it would be to beat Central Michigan at home.
And I mean, we talked about in the preseason. Yeah, you'd love to go 3-0 in the non-conference. But if you go 2-1 in the non-conference and then win a Big 12 game, that's improvement. That's marked improvement right there. So you still have all that in your hand. You still have all that in front of you if you can just beat Ohio and then still steal a Big 12 game. And that's still very possible. It just became a little less likely with the loss this week.
Yeah, it became less likely, but if we're just to compare the scenarios side by side, if you go and beat Central Michigan at home, go and lose to Ohio, you head into conference play against West Virginia 2-1. And you feel, okay, won the games we were supposed to win, couldn't go on the road and get a win. Now you lost to Central Michigan. You're 1-1. If you were able to go and steal a win against Ohio, you're still entering conference play, 2-1, but you're probably feeling a lot better about it. We're not going to forget this game, but if you follow it up with a win on the road at Ohio, you're going to feel better about the rest of your season than you would had you have beaten Central Michigan at home and went on the road and lost, because it's a more impressive win. It's as simple as that, right? Your resume is better than it would have been if you just went 2-1 winning those first two games. Of course, we'd all love to live in this idealistic world where KU goes 3-0 through non-con play, and then all of a sudden, okay, what's really going to happen? One more win, and you got four wins. You've doubled your total output from the last two seasons combined. So there's still opportunity there, but it's intensified, especially because of the fact that not many people are going to pick KU to win on Saturday. We'll continue previewing that game. We'll do that at 4:10 with the voice of Ohio, Russ Eisenstein. David Lawrence joins us at 4 o'clock, so a lot of KU football continuing here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
Big DL makes his triumphant return to RCST. Catch David Lawrence joining Nick Schwert on Rock Chalk Sports Talk every Monday from 4 to 6, right here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
10 after 4, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We will talk to former Kansas defensive coordinator Bill Young. Coming up 20 minutes from right now with David Lawrence, I'm Nick Schwert, and Derek Johnson. Keeping this train on the tracks. On Saturday, it'll be a matchup between two teams coming off losses. KU loses to CMU, and the Ohio Bobcats, who came into Memorial Stadium and secured a pretty convincing win a year ago, coming off a loss to Purdue. They're meeting up this time around in Ohio. Let's talk some Bobcats football with the voice of the Bobcats. Russ Eisenstein joins us now on the program. Russ, how are you today?
Doing great, guys. How are you?
Not very good, Russ. Not very good. In fact, I think I can tell you when I felt like this, because you had something to do with that. It was about a year ago, give or take a few days. And not that we didn't have a lot of respect for Ohio and Central Michigan. But you know, of course, we're in the middle of trying to build something here. And these MAC teams keep cutting us down at the knees. So, there is a lot of memories of that. And of course, that's one of the many reasons why, of course, Ohio was going in as a big favorite on this one. But maybe Jayhawks don't know. You guys had a tough time, but you played in a tough venue against a Big Ten team, and things didn't go well with you either.
No, it was a beautiful night. It was kind of a perfect storm for Purdue because what they did against Louisville in week one and how hard they played. You know, we had the game on a monitor in our booth as we broadcasted Ohio's opener against Hampton, and we just kept expecting Louisville to pull away, but they never did. And Purdue, what they were able to do down in Indianapolis, I thought that was a great job for the two schools to get together to meet halfway and play at Lucas Oil in that game. And so with Jeff Brohm as the new head coach at Purdue, a whole lot of excitement there. Obviously, they went to the MAC with Daryl Hazel from Kent State, and that didn't work. So they're putting more money into facilities. They're doing all the right things. And permanent lights there for the first time. Whenever Purdue's played a night game before, and there haven't been there that many, they brought lights in. So it was a big deal for them to have new permanent lights there, in addition to everything else that's going on. And it couldn't have gone really any worse for Ohio, and it probably couldn't have gone any better for Purdue. You know, it was 10-0 Purdue, then 10-7, and then the second quarter happened, and Ohio just couldn't do a thing right, and Purdue did everything right. You guys know how it is. It's tough when you're broadcasting a game or covering a game, and the team that you're covering and you're rooting for as well. You just want to get to halftime. Well, Ohio fumbled the ball before halftime, and then boom, Purdue popped Ohio for a big play and a touchdown. So I like going to West Lafayette. I'm from Chicago. So that was close for me, and I got to see the Brewers sweep the Cubs on Saturday and Sunday, but Friday just wasn't fun at all.
Well, two names that are going to be ingrained in my memory, at least for a while, Greg Windham and Dorian Brown, who absolutely ran all over KU a year ago in Lawrence. I know Windham no longer the quarterback, but just how similar is this version of Ohio football to what we saw a year ago?
Well, trying to establish something in an entrenched way at quarterback. I think the performance that Nathan Rourke, a junior college transfer, Canadian native, had on Friday will make it a little bit more difficult. As you look at it, Quentin Maxwell, who's not far away from Lawrence, obviously, outside of the Kansas City area, was the starter after fall camp, and he was the platoon guy with Windham last year and played some important games. Well, he hasn't looked as good as I think Ohio fans hoped that he would at the start. So you have Nathan Rourke in there now, who frankly has looked better. And at the press conference today and talking with Coach Solich about it, they're going to see who the number one guy is going to be now and moving forward. They'll play two. Ohio's played two quite often, and you guys have experience with that too. But I think everybody hopes to have that number one guy. And Ohio just doesn't have that legitimate number one yet. But Rourke looks more like it than Maxwell has, at least to this point. And then from a running game, you mentioned Dorian Brown. Well, Ohio had a case of the turnovers on Friday. And so you're seeing a guy who, again, is not far from where you guys are now. Julian Frost is a freshman from Kansas City, Missouri. And we talked about him potentially redshirting in fall camp. He had a couple of good scrimmages. Well, now he's scoring touchdowns, and you add him to the mix at running game, and he's been one of the bright spots for Ohio. Look, I mean, the Hampton game was a tune-up. It was an exhibition game. So we're interested to see Ohio against Kansas again because we really don't know what to expect from this ball club.
Last season, you beat us up front so much, so it probably helped the resume of your defensive line coach who was hired by David Beatty. Talk about that defensive line. I know a couple of more seniors, and then, you know, you got some linebackers, Chad Moore, and then Quentin Poling. Understand that he got nicked up a little bit, but a very talented player.
You're right. And so, obviously, this is the second year that Ohio has had an assistant coach move on, and that coach and that team would play Ohio. Last year was Texas State. Texas State won. Now it's Kansas. Coming in, and so that'll be interesting to see. From the defensive line standpoint, you lose Terrell Basham to the NFL. You lose another Casey Sales as well, and then linebacking core, you lose Blair Brown to the NFL too with the Jacksonville Jaguars. So there's some turnover there. The linebacking core is the best unit on this team, but you're right. We'll see how long Poling is out. We think that he might be the best linebacker in the MAC right now, and his stats would point to that, at least leading into this year. So if he's out, and for any kind of duration, it will be a challenge because the linebacking core was supposed to be the strength. And so now what would happen for Purdue, this was a great run defense last year. Well, this time, Purdue, who had a horrible run game last year, just ran all over Ohio last week. And so there are a lot of question marks for both ball clubs coming here. Kansas, obviously, and then Ohio, too.
We're talking to the voice of the Bobcats, Russ Eisenstein, here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. You mentioned this is kind of going to be at least a good barometer for where Ohio's at. I'm thinking that's kind of what KU was going into last week against CMU. So as you do kind of enter this game, it sounds like we're at the point where Ohio fans and even somebody from yourself as a role who's very entrenched with the program, it seems like you're still kind of trying to figure out what this Ohio team is going to look like in 2017.
Exactly right. And I remember last year taping the pregame interview for the Jayhawk Network with you guys, and we talked about week ones going in because it was week two of the year. And Ohio lost to Texas State, and the only other win that they had last year was against Incarnate Word. You guys played Rhode Island in week one, and they were, all due respect, and you guys needed to win, but they were one of the worst FCS teams in the country last year. And what was interesting is the fact that Central Michigan had to fight to the end in overtime to beat them, and then Central gets you guys last week. So it will be interesting. It's very similar to last year, where we didn't know about week one coming in, and now we're going into week three, and I hope that Kansas is better than what it showed last week. I think Central was able to control that game. And I think that David Beatty and the program there and Shane Zenger are doing the right things. I think Purdue and Kansas are fairly similar. because they have a very good football tradition that needs to be refreshed. And I think Kansas fans can look at what Purdue has done, also a very good basketball school, and say, you know what, both can work here. So I'm hoping the best for Kansas, maybe not this Saturday, but certainly in the future. And I think Purdue and Kansas can be very similar of basketball schools that can make football work too.
Good stuff, Ross. We appreciate you coming on. 2009, the last time Kansas got a road win. I'm sure that's probably made it up to Athens. Also, Poppy White's got to be excited after he looks at the tape and sees what Kansas gave up to a couple of pretty good MAC receivers in Corey Willis and Mark Chapman. But Poppy White is obviously a very talented guy that had a good game last week. Talk about the receiver core and Rourke's ability to throw it downfield.
Well, there was a really, really cool highlight play from last week, and there weren't that many for Ohio, obviously, but there was a touchdown strike from Rourke to Cameron Odom in the back right corner of the end zone. Reviews were inconclusive, but it appeared that he was able to make an over-the-shoulder catch by the back right pylon and drag a foot in, and so that was at least a bright spot on a tough night. Poppy White continues the tradition of Ohioans who are from Oklahoma. The Bobcats have been able to go out to the Plains and pick up some good talent, and Poppy is one of those guys. He's a highlight player. He I think, was frustrated with the way that the offense went on Saturday, but he's quick strike. Ohio will use him in a variety of ways, maybe a jet sweep, wheel routes if he's in the backfield, but most certainly a wide receiver, I would say, about 90% of the time. So Ohio's trying to audition some guys for that top wide receiver spot. There was an injury in fall camp. Elijah Ball would have been that guy, but he's gone for the year with an ACL. But bottom line here, no matter who makes plays, and the same thing can be said for Kansas, guys have to make plays this week. It's time. It's week three. And even though Kansas has struggled and hasn't won on the road in about 100 years, it doesn't matter. A win over a Big 12 school, regardless of what has happened in the last couple of years for that program, is big for the MAC. It just is. And for casual fans, the name Kansas and that great university still carries weight, particularly in the league like the MAC. So we remember no fun against Kansas in Las Vegas in a basketball tournament a couple of years ago. So it would be nice to win over Kansas from Ohio's standpoint in football here, much like last year.
Well, that's an interesting point, because I would assume that heading into that game against Purdue last week, like, Ohio fans were probably feeling pretty confident and were expecting a good game, if not an Ohio victory. And I'm always interested to get the opposing perspective, especially in the non-conference, when we really don't know what these teams are going to be as a finished product. But is this a game on Saturday, even though it is against a Big 12 opponent, like, is this a game where Ohio fans are expecting this team to welcome KU into Lawrence and get a victory?
Yes, they are. Because I think Ohio is further along, or at least the record and pedigree of the last couple of years here should indicate that Ohio is not in the spot where this is an upset win. I think Ohio at least has proven against different competition. So it's not necessarily fair. Ohio's not going up against the Big 12 every week like Kansas. So you could obviously turn it around with big wins at a place like KU. At Ohio, going to bowl games and winning games and Frank Solich and all of this, Ohio's played well against Big 10, Big 12 competition. A couple of years ago, lost by 3 at Minnesota, win at Penn State, win at Illinois back in 2006. So these are no longer upsets, but to get a name like Kansas in the Peden Stadium I think is important. I think that's good scheduling. But Ohio's just a little bit further along than where Kansas is right now. And the same was last week. It would not have been an upset if Ohio won. The upset in Bobcat minds, and if folks know college football, was the fact that it was not a ball game. The fact that it was a blowout on the other side, that was the upset about last week.
Good stuff, Russ. So here's the big question for you. Is there more hippies in Athens or Lawrence?
More in Athens or Lawrence?
Yeah.
I
understand we share that in common.
Yeah. But Athens is, and much like Lawrence, there's something for everybody in both towns. I love going to KU last year. I mean, Mass Ave and all that stuff to look at up and down that street last year, that was really fun. We stayed in Topeka, so we didn't get to get involved in everything, but it was a good time, and folks that are coming to Athens are going to enjoy it, too.
We use hippies as an endearing term, and Lawrence, certainly not a dig at anybody, yeah. So it's a good
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Russ, we appreciate the time. Best of luck on the call on Saturday. Thank you so much for joining us today.
You bet. Safe trip, guys. Looking forward to it.
Russ, looking forward to seeing you on Saturday. Thanks.
Alrighty, that's Russ Eisenstein, the voice of the Bobcats with David Lawrence. I'm Nick Schwartz. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Let's keep the guest train rolling. We got another big one joining us coming up in 5 minutes. Mr. Bill Young.
Yes, and the reason why, first of all, Bill and I were friends, not just business acquaintances, but I was a big fan, still am a big fan of Bill Young. And the weekend was perfect last week with the Orange Bowl coming back. Maybe there was just one thing that you know, I wanted to hear a little bit more about Bill Young because I think he was a large part of that special year and, of course, a special time. And we're going to hear from Bill coming up after this. He's in Tulsa now. He's coaching. So if he sounds busy getting prepared for the next week, then that's why.
All right, Bill Young joins us next on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
With Nick Schwert, this is David Lawrence. Welcome back as we continue talking Kansas football. And now we're going to kind of move back a little bit more than a week and talk to a young man that knows a lot about coming off tough losses, which Kansas, of course, suffered on Saturday. This guy, I got to know him when he came to Kansas, and I'm a big fan and continue to be of Bill Young, the defensive coordinator at Tulsa. He was the defensive coordinator at the University of Kansas and helped them rise through the best year in the history of the program. And Bill joins us now. Bill, thanks for joining us.
Hey, great to be on.
19 moves in your 45-year career. Tulsa twice, Oklahoma State twice. It's got to feel a little bit like home going back to Tulsa.
It is. It's a great place to be, working for a great head football coach. So it's pretty exciting right now.
So, Bill, Nick Schwert here. I appreciate you joining us today. Almost 40 years of coaching experience under your belt. In what ways, maybe with the most prominent way, that Bill Young is different than the guy who took over at Oklahoma State back in 1976?
Well, I've got a lot more lumps on my head right now than I had back then. That's for sure, you know. And to correct you there, this is my 49th coaching season.
Oh, I shortchanged you. I'm sorry.
It's time to get to 50.
It's because you look so young. Well,
that's it.
Let's go to not the tail end of your career, because you've, I think, been to about five places since 2007 season. But you had a lot to do. Let's just say that up front. You had a lot to do with the success of the Kansas Jayhawks during that Orange Bowl run. And I'm talking about the years leading up to the Orange Bowl season. Just talk about that in your eyes. And I know you tutored a young man who now serves as our defensive coordinator, Clint Bowen, that I think a lot alike. Just talk about that tenure at the University of Kansas.
Well, one, you're being way too flattering on what effect I had. I was very, very fortunate to be able to work with some really outstanding coaches and outstanding players, and that's what it's all about. You know, I mean, you don't win games as a coach. You win games with great players, and we were real fortunate to have those. But it was a fun time. It really was. Lawrence, Kansas is a phenomenal place to live, and the University of Kansas is a phenomenal place to coach. I mean, people that have never been there don't understand how great it really is. And I know that my wife and I talk all the time about how much we enjoyed being there and so on and so forth. And, Clint Bowen is a heck of a coach back then. Obviously, he's even better now. And, we had a bunch of other good coaches and you know, like I said, good players. But it was a tremendous experience.
Now, Bill, was there a smoking gun during your time at Kansas? Was there a turning point when you realized, okay, we're starting to get some really good players on this side of the ball? We're starting to get some guys who just kind of understand what we want. Was there a point when you realized that you could have something special on that defense?
Well, I think there was. I think the last two or three years that we were there, that we did have some pretty good players defensively, and that that we were able to have some big wins. You know, we shut down Missouri pretty good. We had a big win over Nebraska and some games like that. I think obviously that 1 year was kind of the high point of the whole time there. You know, when you win 12 games, it's so hard to do. And to beat, some of the teams we were able to beat and go on and win the Orange Bowl, that was a great experience.
Well, some of those guys, of course, Aqib Talib, everyone knows about Aqib and Harris, but, Mortensen, Rivera, pretty good linebackers. And I know you went down and had a lot to do with bringing up a couple of Okies like Russell Brorson and then, of course, Derek Fine on the other side of the ball. But kind of famous for taking two and two-star athletes and making them into five-star players. But just talk about, how you were able to bring in the talent that you were able to, despite the fact that at the time Kansas wasn't known as a football powerhouse.
Well, we got lucky, I think, to be able to recruit a young guy like a Russell Borenson, who not only was a great football player, but he's a great student and a student of the game. And when you told him one thing, I mean, it was locked in. He was going to be able to process and do it. Same way with Jake Laptad, another defensive end out of Jinx, Oklahoma. And I'm trying to remember some names here. James Holt out of Altus ended up being a heck of a player, and then obviously Chris Harris is still playing, there were just a lot of good guys that ended up being awfully good players, that came from Oklahoma and Kansas, added to it, so it was a fun time.
And then James McClinton, who's, one of my favorite all times, and I've been doing this for about 35 years, defensive lineman of the year in the Big 12, a guy that I personally hope will be in our Ring of Honor, and I think he's got a chance to do that. The most disruptive defensive lineman that I've covered my time as a Jayhawk, so unselfish, such a fun kid to be around, but I know he's very talented, but you were able to use him. And then my favorite play maybe ever might be the fourth down play against Texas A&M and College Station when they put in the big fullback. So could you talk about James and leading up to that play down there at College Station?
Well, James, he did more with less than any player I've ever coached. And I don't mean that as a derogatory statement toward him. He just was not an overly large defensive lineman, but he had a tremendous quickness, and he had a motor that just wouldn't quit. And he worked so hard and had such a tremendous attitude, and like you say, made a ton of big plays when he was there. The thing we played him early. I wish we had redshirted him. I mean, that would have really helped our football team if we could have, but at the time we just couldn't.
Bill, we've had James on a couple of times over the past couple of months, and we can't seem to find him ever being in a bad mood, ever being in a mood other than the happiest person in the room. Was he like that during practice? Was he like that all the time? Was he always in such a chipper mood?
I think so. I certainly can't remember a time when he, didn't have a smile on his face and working hard, trying to get better and trying to encourage his teammates to get better.
Well, I know that you're busy. You're getting ready for you got Toledo coming up, right? And that's going to be a tough one. You had a big win last week, but just a little bit about Tulsa football 2017.
Well, we're kind of a team that's building. I think we're similar to the way we were there at the University of Kansas. We won 12 games last year, or excuse me, 10 games last year, and missed winning 12 by just inches. But we're in a little bit of a rebuilding phase this year. We're better than what we're playing, and we got to continue working hard, and hopefully good things will happen. But it's exciting times around here, and we just got to keep, pounding the rock.
Yeah, just don't play teams like Oklahoma State, right? Isn't it all about the scheduling?
That's not a good choice right there. I tell you, they are a very good team, We played Oklahoma 2 years ago, and than we played Ohio State last year. And at the point in time we played them this year, I think they're better than either of those teams. You know, I mean, their quarterback and wide receiver situation is just about as good as it can get.
Wow. That's not going to be something to look forward to. We play him at the end of the year. Bill, thanks so much. I'm always a big fan of you. I hope someday we'll be able to sit down and have a cold drink together. And best of luck to you and Tulsa for the remainder of this season.
Hey, thanks a lot. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be on. Rock chalk.
All right.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks. What a great guy. He's very, very humble. Not one to take any credit. But let me tell you what. Throughout the year, I always felt that there was a mismatch, as you always you talk about, you know, head coaches going against each other, but really it's, you know, your defensive coordinator going against the opponent's offensive coordinator. And, you know, I don't know if it's arrogant or what, but you always felt like we had a mismatch going in on that, kind of, you know, like what we've done in other sports. But Bill Young, I miss him, wish him the best. I know he's doing well, but how about that 49-year career?
I know, I shortchanged him. I need to stop just trying to do simple math in my head, just addition. It doesn't work well. I see the number 1969, I think, oh, 2040-something, right? No. Well, yeah, he was quick to correct me, too. He's closing in on 50.
Yeah, you know, he was like in 40 years when he was at Kansas, and he's been to five places since then. You know, he left Kansas to say that he was going to, his wife wanted to be in the sunshine, and he got an offer to go to Miami. Obviously, they didn't enjoy that sunshine for very long.
Next year, he's at Oklahoma State.
right. Wanted to go back home. That's where he played, Oklahoma State.
Well, that's awesome. Bill Young, former defensive coordinator, joining us on RCST. We should probably get back to some KU, some current KU football talk, because we have limited time, only an hour 20 left. We got to continue talking that SEMO game, getting ready for this Ohio game with David Lawrence. I'm Nick Schwartz. You are listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
With Nick Schwartz, this is David Lawrence, and yes, the sun will come out tomorrow. It was not a good weekend. It was black weekend, perhaps, for the athletics department at Kansas. Not only, you know, started out with football losing a game that many thought that they should win, and then top 10 Kansas loses to a top 10 Creighton team at home, but lost in straight sets, and then a ranked soccer team, after defeating a top 5 USC team, lost 5-1 to Texas A&M. And so we're going to cover both of these with a couple people that know and care. Jill Dorsey Hall, a good friend of mine. We call women's hoops together, but she is the authority on volleyball, former player herself, and just a rock star young lady and a great mom, I understand. So Jill, great to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me. I love to talk volley anytime, David.
Well, let's talk it right now. You'd already kind of talked me off of the cliff and said that, of course, this was a great team. It's a team that took us out a year ago, but kind of break down how we should be feeling about volleyball now moving forward.
Well, you know, to start it off on Labor Day, it was a Labor Day special, you beat a top 15 opponent in Kentucky, and they played exceptionally well. They swept them, right? So that started off what we called a beast of a week for Kansas volleyball. You back that up on Friday midday. So they played Monday. They played two on Friday, in which they both won. They beat a great Belmont team that I think is going to go to the NCAA tournament, picked to win the Ohio Valley Conference, and they swept them. And then a commanding victory, which I was most pleased with, was their victory over Purdue. I mean, if you were there at that match on Friday night, you would say, hey, we might see this team in Kansas City. They played exceptionally well. And so you're feeling really great. But what would be the cherry on the top, right, is to get some revenge, if you will, against the Creighton Blue Jays squad that knows them so well. And I think that can't go overlooked, because Creighton has been used to coming to Lawrence, Kansas, not only for a season, a non-con matchup, but then also in the NCAA tournament. It seems like selection selection committee sends them to Lawrence quite often. So they were not shocked by how loud it gets in Horace Mann Athletic Center. They were not thrown off by it. And I thought their head coach actually did a great job of calling timeouts whenever the crowd got lively. And in a game of volleyball, when you have a top 10 opponent, a swing of 1 to 2, 3 points could really be the differential between a victory in a set or a loss. And so that's where I thought they controlled it. Creighton did. They controlled the first two sets. Kansas should have won that third set. They had every opportunity. They had a 5-point lead. But hey, I'm here to tell you,
there's good news.
It's actually great news. And I really don't think that Coach Richard, although it leaves a sour taste in your mouth, you're really, really happy after Friday night. And unfortunately, it changes your thoughts a bit on going into Saturday at that loss. But Creighton went into Seattle and beat a University of Washington team who was third in the country at the time, upended them on the road. So Creighton, I'm telling you, is a great team. They went to Elite Eight, and they didn't lose anybody. They lost one, excuse me, but they've added some talent. Actually, Naomi Hickman, that hails from Free State, she's a freshman for the Blue Jays. So all is good. I think either of these teams we could see later on in the year, and go support your Jayhawks because they have three All-Americans that are absolute studs, and they're fun to watch.
Hey, Jill, Nick Schwartz here. I appreciate you hopping on with us today. I know maybe this gets a different answer if I ask you this a week ago, but obviously the team loses some three big-time seniors from a year ago and Cassie Wade, Taylor Soucy, and Maggie mm-hmm. Anderson. So far this season, have the effects been noticeable of not having those girls around?
I mean, of course, right? I mean, you had the Big 12 over all the year, and Cassie Wade, Taylor Soucy just drove the energy bus and was from a consistent standpoint. And then Maggie Anderson is just that culture kid. Although I will tell you, Maggie Anderson is now director of ops, and she's there with the team. So she's still there around, which is exciting. They just announced that about a week ago. But, you know, with that being said, Taylor Alexander is now in for Taylor Soucy in that middle blocker position, one of the two. She's a transfer from Ole Miss, and she brings a experience with her, a certain attitude, and she played in the SEC. She was one of their top middle blockers, transferred in. So from that standpoint, I think that is great news for the Jayhawks. I think Allie Nelson, who's filling in, is now in those shoes of a libero position, the oh-so-crucial, in my opinion, granted, I'm a little biased because that was my role when I played volleyball, is in that libero position. But you can't serve and pass. You can't you know, start your offense or continue to play on. But I think Allie is locked in, and she'll continue to grow in that position. And then Addie Berry has really just latched on to that serving specialist, of which Maggie Anderson provided for the Jayhawks. And she's that locker room type of kid who says, hey, you know what? I didn't get that libero position, but I'm going to own this serving specialist role. So good things, and that's kind of the transition in those three positions.
You're awesome. Jill, you remind me a little bit of myself, just about 25 years younger, though. You got passion, you care a lot, and you get ticked off when we lose. So I feel your pain.
You know, I couldn't sleep last night, and I just was on Saturday night, excuse me, although I was happy because there had so many alumni there. It was alumni night, and volleyball is just a family feel. We really showed up to support them, and we'll continue to support them. You know, you just ebb and flow, but they're top team 10, David. So
okay,
you can't be too sad.
All right, we're going to call you back, okay, later, and you can give us some better news.
Please do.
All right, Jill Dorsey Hall, joining us.
Thank you.
One of the experts on Kansas volleyball, but yeah, love her because I just feel it in her heart. She, you know, she lives it, man. It's her passion. You know, it's kind of like I am with football, and of course Josh Klingler did football, but he also called the soccer match. You know, the eye of this is kind of getting the dark weekend, you know, out of us so we can move forward. We've already started talking about Ohio, but soccer, who had a top 5 win over USC, welcomed in Texas A&M and really took one on the chin. And Josh Klingler joins us now. Josh, we're just trying to talk about it. You know, that's what our therapist said to do, talk about it and then just release it from our heads. One of the darkest weekends in Kansas sports history. And of course, you had a big part in two of those. So talk about soccer. Was there any comparison to the football game? And maybe some good news moving forward from a tough match, 5-1. People have told me that's like getting beat something like 60-7 or something like in football. I don't know.
Well, first off, I don't like being associated with both of those as if I had something to do with
you're
the outcome.
Blaming it all on Josh, man.
But yeah, they had a rough afternoon yesterday. Faced a really good team, Texas A&M. That was a top 10 ranked team that was coming off a really bad loss and probably caught them at the wrong time. But also the KU squad just didn't play very well yesterday either. And Coach Francis wasn't real happy with their fight and with their hustle, and a lot of things kind of went wrong in that home match yesterday. But you know, Kansas still really good team in the top 25, and they had a really tough non-conference schedule that was ranked, I think, fourth toughest in the country. So they knew it wasn't going to be easy. But, yeah, yesterday a little bit lopsided, to say the least.
And I know last week a tie against St. Louis. You mentioned that non-conference portion of the schedule. Have the expectations changed at all with Big 12 play looming?
No, I don't think so. I think that they wanted the non-conference to get them ready for the Big 12. But, you know, you have a couple of, you know, real tough losses, Nebraska in the first game and then Texas A&M on Sunday. So you have a couple of kind of crooked losses in that non-con. So it very well could come down to, you know, how they fare during Big 12 play. But, you know, they're going to face some good teams in the Big 12, but face some pretty, you know, two really good teams, three really good teams, beat one of them and lost to two of them in the non-con. So, I mean, that's kind of what you sign up for a little bit now, to try to boost that schedule and impress some people so that if, you know, you don't run the table, for instance, in the Big 12, you have a say when it comes to the NCAA tournament time. So certainly they'll be prepared for Big 12 play, which is just around the corner. Tough schedule too. They have five straight road games now, two of which are in the non-conference before they have three straight to start Big 12 play on the road. So Coach Francis' squad going to be the road warriors to begin the season.
I like Coach Francis' scheduling because it does prepare you for the very best, and I know the Big 12 is very good in soccer. Now, here is a question that not many people outside of you can answer. I'm upstairs, but I just didn't feel the edge that Kansas had on football, maybe on the sideline as much. I talked a little bit about the fact that, you know, people expected them to win. It's a little different than, you know, when, you know, they get that lack of respect thing. Did you feel that on the sideline, and was it a similar feeling on soccer that they were missing that extra edge that you look for as a coach and getting the most out of your team?
Yeah, certainly so. I mean, I thought from the football perspective the other day, David, that, you know, they got the wake-up call with probably the halftime and then scoring those two scores right out of the gate in the second half. But that was really the only time that they really were up. So, you know, you got to bring that energy all the time and you got to bring that fight all the time. And it seemed like they were kind of waiting for something to happen on Saturday. And once they got that jolt, they just weren't able to sustain it. And, you know, credit Central Michigan. I know you watched the tape from their first game and said that was a massive improvement from week one to week two. Unfortunately, we didn't see that type of improvement for Kansas, and unfortunately looked like a little regression in game two. And certainly from a momentum perspective, you know, the guys were pretty down after the game, and you need to see them bounce back and try to go after a road win this week. Cause I think, you know, I think when the schedule came out, everybody, probably players included, were all thinking, hey, if you win your first two games, let's go see if you can end that streak of road losses and kind of roll the dice with a little money in the back pocket. But, you know, they're kind of trying to find out what their identity is after two games instead of, you know, feeling pretty good about themselves at 2-0 and, you know, kind of rolling the dice on a road game.
And if you're looking for a silver lining, Josh, I think, you know, going just using the past 10 years or so as a guide, just when you play in the Big 12 with all of these high-flying, potent offenses, it can be very, very frustrating and exhausting if you don't have a quarterback who can sling it down the field. Not his best performance, but we still saw Peyton Bender and his ability and affinity to kind of push the ball downfield with those big chunk plays. And I think the receiving core certainly showcased its depth once again. So if you are looking for a silver lining, wouldn't it be the fact that this team still has the ability to move the ball, tons of depth at receiver, which should make for at least some opportunities to stay in some games in Big 12 play?
Yeah, we all know in this conference you got to score, right? So this team does look like they have the ability to you know, create some offense and score the football. I mean, I was most disappointed last week with the Kansas defense. I didn't see a performance like that coming from that group. They looked pretty lost, especially on the the back end of the Kansas defense. So to me, that was the biggest surprise. I think I like what I've seen offensively, you know, but you're kind of surprised because we've seen this defense kind of carry this team at times, try to keep them in the games. And you said, boy, only if they had some offense could they, you know, possibly pull out some of these games. Now it looks like they have the offense, and at least for a day, you're kind of scratching your head and saying, what the heck happened to that Kansas defense? I thought they were going to be better in game number two.
Josh Klingler, my good buddy, and he is around at all. If it has anything to do with Kansas City, Kansas sports, Josh Klingler is there. Josh, there's a rumor that after we get back from winning our first road game since 2009, the radio crew may not make it out of Topeka when we land at the airport. So just passing that along.
You know, we're very overdue for that because I think that plan has been in place for a while.
Okay.
So we need to make it happen, yes.
A party, what, 9 years in the making?
Tell Jackie and the twins, Nick's from Topeka, he'll be there. Right. He'll have us all set up, and it'll be, you know what, sometimes you just got to do it. And, you know, the first victory since 2009, I'm there.
Yeah, I think it's well overdue, and hopefully, you know, the guys can get it done too, because you can tell it's a streak nobody wants to talk about. It's a streak that they're all aware of, and most of them didn't have anything to do with what has happened on the road. But you some of the guys that have been around, I mean, it's wearing on them. They know that they are long overdue to get a win away from home. So hopefully they can get that done this week.
Well, isn't it just the radio crew that really knows it? I mean, those kids, they don't know. They don't really care about 2009. I wouldn't if I was them. They didn't have anything to do
with
it.
Well, they don't know when, but they know that it's been a while.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That they know it's been too long and that it's been kind of hanging over everyone's heads. And certainly they hear it from fans, too, that it's just been forever, it seems, since they're able to get a win away from home.
I think it's the people that endured all of them, you know, the ones that should enjoy it. So it's all about us.
So you guys,
okay, got it. That's fair.
All right, Josh, you're the best, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Josh.
All right, thanks, guys.
All righty, that's Josh Klingler on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with DL and myself. I'm Nick Schwert. I want to keep talking some KU football.
Let's
know we got to look ahead.
I know you said it.
Yeah. You said it before. But we haven't spent a lot of time talking about that game. And before we do completely focus our attention on Ohio, we have to pick up the pieces, figure out what went wrong, and what needs to get fixed before that game on Saturday. So we'll start doing that next, right here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
All right, it's about a quarter till six. New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We got Hawk Talk coming up at 6 o'clock tonight. What do you think's been going through David Beatty's head over the last 48 hours or so, David?
Wow, great question. You know, I dreamed that I would go in there. I was started to be a coach at Kansas, and then of course Don Fambro was fired, and my options kind of got different and started a family. So I've, you know, I thought about that, but, you know, being a head coach at a much, much different level, I can't imagine it, Nick. I mean, all the things. And I would think that he really has to stay true to himself. And I think Mark Mangino told him this when they visited. And Mark mentioned that on with us, I think, that he told this, and that's stay true to your core values. And that's what I was really impressed with Mark Mangino. This guy had never been a head coach of anything his entire life. He comes to Kansas. Of course, we're getting our butts handed to us first year, getting killed. And he never did sway from what he knew was the right way to build the program. And I was, again, I really impressed me more than anything else about Mark. And that's what David, you know, he can't allow outside interference to influence what he's doing. You know, he's a good guy.
Well, he kind of said that after the game. He said, you know, something along the lines of it being a reality check. And how I kind of interpreted that was, hey, I know I hear all the positive vibes going around town. I hear everybody saying they're excited about us this year and that year. Well, guess what? It's a reality check for us. It's a reality check for the fans to say, we're not where we want to be yet. And it's never been more evident than what just happened.
It reminds me of one of my favorite. It was a Mason quote. I've kind of picked up a couple of quotes from every one of our past coaches, and we've had about 30, it seems like, since I've been here. But one of them was Glenn Mason. Glenn Mason was a Woody Hayes guy. You probably don't know much. Woody Hayes is one of those dinosaurs that, yeah, he hit somebody, but hey, that's kind of what Woody Hayes did back then. But his comment, and Mason took this on how you should look at the media, and his Woody Hayes's way of dealing with the media and what he told Glenn Mason, how Glenn Mason did it was F him, because if your things are going well, you're not going to need them. And if things are not going to, or if things aren't going well, well, they're going to screw you anyway.
Right.
Right. And so, sucking up or changing anything because of media influence or outside influences, it doesn't matter, because again, when things are going great, you don't need anyone, because winning is everything. And if things are going bad, certainly they're going to take their shots at you. So forget about outside influences. Just deal with the things you need to.
Do you have a time in your playing career that's reminiscent of at least a situation like this, to where you're feeling good, expectations are high, and then you just get hit with that gut check when it's like, okay, well, we're not where we thought we were. And how do you, what's the natural reaction to trying to recover from that?
Interesting you ask that, because it just popped in my head. We played Louisville at home. And, of course, back then, our non-con schedule was, Pittsburgh, Louisville, and Syracuse. Fambro always thought that, the University of Kansas should play only the best. And of course, Bill Snyder kind of changed all that, saying that to build a program, here's what you need to do. So anyway, we played Louisville. They were the least of our non-conference opponents, and we had them at home. We kind of thought we were going to win, and they kicked our butts. And I remember Hadel, who was not long for words. He was our offensive coordinator. It's so cool. And he kind of handled us like an NFL team. He started the Sunday meeting, and he went through everyone. He went through every one of the offensive starters and said something about him. And I think I graded out best, because he said I wasn't worth a bleep.
That was
the best grade that anybody had.
So you're leaving that feeling pretty good.
I left there thinking I graded higher than everybody else, because I just wasn't worth a bleep, because it got pretty personal. Well, anyway, to prove my point, we played, this shows you how long ago it was, the dome in Syracuse is called the
Carrier Dome.
Carrier Dome. It was the first game played at the Carrier Dome.
Really?
Yes. We played Syracuse, and we were upset. We kind of had a mantra that week. It was two words, and I can say them. that's what I can say.
I got it figured out, I think.
So, that was it. We were just upset. And we took that there, big underdogs. And I'll never forget Steve Smith, my best friend, roommate. He led us to a big victory over the Orangemen. But that was it. That's the attitude you got to take in there. You got to be upset, but you got to make sure that your actions, speak for that. And of course, that happens at every level, middle school, high school, all levels of college. You get upset. You don't like how things were, so you change them. And you can change them by how you play moving forward. And that happens in practice, because we had an attitude every day in practice. We were not happy. Our actions spoke for themselves when we went at Syracuse. And we played very well, and we got the win. So probably most people that played have a story like that, and that's what Kansas' story has to be. They had nothing to do. I don't even like talking about that streak, because literally it's only Josh Klingler and I that know any, and Bob Newton have any knowledge of all that stuff. I mean, some of our coaches are so young. Heck, they were in high school almost, you know, when that streak started. But it's about them this year, and they did not play as they should have and could have, and they have an opportunity to do something about that. And you only get 12 opportunities. Man, it's just so few. They work all year long, and they have just 12 shows. And they've had a bad show this year, and they can change all that. And as bad as we felt, and going back to what I said earlier on, the only advantage to caring so much and feeling just so rotten like I felt on Saturday and like Jill Dorsey Hall felt is that when things go well, we're going to feel so much better than everybody else.
And we got Hawk Talk coming up tonight. Then tomorrow, David Beatty's got his weekly press conference. So you're going to get to hear a lot from him. And I think it's always fun to compare what you hear directly after the game versus what you hear 2 days later when the coach has a chance to go back and watch some film. The after the game stuff is great because emotions are flying high and you're going to get the honest, raw answers. And then later in the week, you get a little bit more measured response once you go back and watch the film. I mean, last week, case in point, after the game, Beatty talked about the interceptions, the two picks that Bender threw, and he said, you know, those giveaways are unacceptable. And then after watching the film, he saw, okay, well, you know, it looked like he underthrew a guy or overthrew a guy, and then going back and watching the tape, finds out that miscommunication, guys running the wrong routes, breaking off their routes too early. So excited to hear what Coach Beatty says tonight with Brian and then tomorrow in front of the podium.
And I'm going to get you a couple of interviews. I'll send them to you after that. But yeah, just going back with football, because you're talking about, you know, 50 guys that have a big part in a football game. I mean, everybody changes a little bit. You can have a significant different result. And you just can't be quick to judge, okay, because a quarterback gets sacked, well, it's the offensive line fault, or because, you know, we have interceptions or incompletion, it's automatically the quarterback's fault. No. I mean, it's amazing to me that the media outlets that know nothing about football that immediately starts judging, you know, someone because, you know, there's a sack, you blame this, because there's an interception, you blame the quarterback. Quarterback does have more responsibility, and he's responsible for a lot of different things. But, you know, those receivers, they're making reads on every route, depending on if it's man or zone or, you know, is it cover three? And that's going to determine the route they run. So the quarterback does the read on the secondary, and you know, the receiver gets the wrong read, that he's going to throw the ball, and it's going to look like it's a really poorly thrown pass, but he was just throwing – against the coverage that the receiver should have been running the route for. And so it's just, there's just a lot of things to go in there. Defensively, you know, we got to get better. Everyone up there has got to get better. The secondary, we knew it wasn't our strength coming in. And so we got to do a little better job of getting pressure on their quarterback. You know, looks like we're going to see Nathan Rourke, who, you know, hasn't started. I don't think he started a game yet.
The great Nathan Rourke.
Yeah, he came in relief last game and finished a quarterback, but they got a great receiver in Poppy White, and they may or may not have Quentin Poling, their best defensive player. We'll have to wait and see. It's a good team. It's a MAC team, and they will always have an edge on Kansas, right? Because we're Kansas, you know? We're a Power 5 conference. They're ticked that we're in the Big 12, and they're not.
Right.
Okay? You can bet that, you know, they were living it up. And you know, the announcers for CMU, I mean, they were living up, doing a little partying at the end of our broadcast. You know, and I'm not mad. I said, hey, they deserve it. You know, they deserve it. More power to them. But I tell you what, when we get back from Topeka, we'll be having our party too, the Jayhawk Radio Network, because we deserve it. And I'm excited for the opportunity. Yeah, it hurt. It hurt. And I pat on the back all the Kansas fans that are hanging in there with us, because I get it. It's been seven rough years, and we think we got this thing turned, and all in with David Beatty. I think he's got great coaches, the best coaching staff he's had since he's been here. So I'm excited to get out there to Athens, Ohio.
That's right, and I'll be there in Topeka to show you guys around town for the party.
I expect you at the airport when we return.
I will. Okay, I'll be waiting there with the goodie.
Don't make me call you.
With goodie baskets for everyone, all right? We're not going to have to wait to get to the bar.
Pick up Gurley on the way.
You got it.
He'll have party favors.
He's David Lawrence. Here's some exclusive interviews he catches tomorrow. talking to some Kansas football players. He's DL. I'm Nick Schwert for Derek Johnson. Thanks for tuning in. Hawk Talk coming up next.